Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning. Happy New Year. And greetings to our new Shuso. This is a little bit of an odd talk to have when it is so utterly bright and beautiful outside. So bear with me. In the introduction to Cultivating the Empty Field, Tigan Layton describes the topic for today is darkness. Hence, it's funny on a bright and beautiful day. So he says, in the harmony of difference and equality, Shuto, or Sekito Kisen, as we name him in our lineage, equates the ultimate or the universal with darkness, also sometimes called principle, unity, undifferentiated sameness, or what Sekito terms the spiritual source. The light, by contrast, signifies the world of particulars, this being the light that differentiated phenomena, the 10,000 things of the sense realm, or the sense desire realm. And this relationship, or rather this particular set of relationships between light and darkness, can be further examined in the teachings of the five ranks. And that said, this talk is not about the five ranks. That's another talk entirely. But this talk is about darkness and how we conceptualize and work with darkness as practice. In early Buddhism, darkness is linked to ignorance, or sometimes the Sanskrit word avidya is used, which is often defined as ignorance, delusion, not understanding the true nature of reality. Avidya means to not see or not know. And the antidote to that ignorance is the development of wisdom, the development of prajna. We often talk about prajna a lot in our practice. And we can hear this sometimes, at least as I was putting this talk together, I kept hearing the phrase, the darkness of our delusion. And I had to hunt down where it pops up in our chants, our recitations. It pops up at least twice in the Vesak offertory. And as I was putting this talk together, I could hear Genko's voice singing that. It's amazing how chanted scriptures can go into the body and pop up again in surprising places. We get another sense of a meaning for darkness in our liturgy stemming from the 8th, 9th, and 10th centuries in China, from the harmony of difference and sameness. We have refined and common speech come together in the dark. Clear and murky phrases are distinguished in the light. And also, in the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. This tends to point to perhaps darkness is something not as we usually think of it. What is this darkness that's within light? In the precious mirror samadhi, we have, in darkest night, it's perfectly clear, and in the light of dawn, it is hidden. And the late Zen teacher, Mel Weitzman, in his commentary, says, dark is oneness, no boundaries, purity, and light is phenomena, various existences, individual pieces, the relative world. They're like opposites, but they don't negate each other. They're two aspects of a mirror. Light is revealed in darkness, but don't try to see it in some idea of light. This seems to be a pretty significant shift from avidya, ignorance, to this relational idea of darkness. And some of that comes from cultural influences. Buddhism, as it came to China and developed there, was influenced by Confucianism and Taoism. And there was an interplay over time between the three, between Buddhism and Taoism, Confucianism, each impacting the other, taking on bits, being shaped by the thinkers and practitioners of those traditions. In the first verse of the Tao Te Ching, it reads, "The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. This source is called darkness, darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding." And this sounds pretty similar to Sekito's usage, right? That sense of darkness as a source, as connecting. Our colloquial use of the word darkness is associated with many things. Darkness is a noun in English. Dark as an adjective, which is related but not equivalent, might mean an absence of light, bad, morbid, despairing, or depressed mood. We speak of dark times. Being in a dark mood, enjoying dark chocolate, having a dark sense of humor. Lots of ways to use this word. This time of year, near the winter solstice, is the dark part of the year, with long nights and short days. Space is dark. Nighttime is dark. When we collect our fears and our worries, we often put them under the umbrella term, dark. Darkness, returning to the noun, is often seen as negative, something to get out of, or perhaps something that is deliciously enjoyed. What I want to point out is that it's important to be aware of what view of dark or of darkness is being used when it's encountered, especially when encountering it in a Buddhist context. It can be easy to mistake one view or one understanding with another. And it doesn't help that many of us encounter Buddhist teachings in translations. Words translators choose can make a difference. One translator might choose darkness as a translation for avidya, and another might choose ignorance. We get that a lot studying Dogen. If you've ever taken a Dogen class with Jiko, there is this emphasis on how is this translated? What other words are being used? How might this come out if we look at it a slightly different way? So I want to switch gears. So far this has been pretty heady, pretty intellectual, pretty wordy, talking about words. And I recognize that not everyone who's listening to this talk, either now or in the future, may identify as Buddhist or have familiarity with Buddhist scriptures. Some folks may be newer to practice, and that's okay. If that's you, bear with me and follow along as you can. But I want to speak to the importance of darkness to practice, as we practice Zen. So take a moment, settle in. If you need to shift a bit or switch your feet to be more comfortable, do so. Take a breath. Notice your weight and how it's grounded on either your cushion or your chair. Feel your body. Just a few weeks ago, we celebrated Rohatsu, the commemoration of the Buddha's enlightenment. Yesterday, I think there was a Zazenkai. Was there a Zazenkai? Okay, there was a Zazenkai. Lots of sitting, lots of meditation. In the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, Siddhartha had a life of privilege, and he left that to seek out how to address the suffering he witnessed in the world around him. He tried many techniques, mastering many of them, but he hadn't found the answers to ease his own suffering. After engaging in ascetic practices that taxed his body, he took a simple meal given to him in offering, and he sat down with determination to discover what had not been discovered. It's said that he had several insights that night. He saw into the functioning of karma, of cause and effect. He saw into his past lives, discerning what brought him to that time and place. And he had his great enlightenment upon seeing the morning star. This was a person who encountered, I might imagine, as he sat through the night, frustration, doubt, possibility of despair, determination, definitely. But he was tempted by sense desires, Mara coming to him to challenge him. Who here, when sitting in Zazen, has realized that there are so many other things you might be doing? That's Mara. But Mara's another talk as well. So wrapped in darkness, sitting through the night, wrestling with his mind and emotions, calling on the earth to witness his struggle. Darkness is very much a character in the Buddha's story. Darkness is rich with possibility, and possibility is what Siddhartha encountered, choosing a way, a path that led to awakening, rather to further bondage, to sense desire or delusion. I don't know if this could have happened in the daylight. For those of you who have the experience, think of what it's like to sit during Rohatsu. The days are short and the nights are long. There's a stillness, a quietness, sitting in the zendo. The lights are dim, especially during yaza, sitting late into the night. Darkness is very much a part of Rohatsu, very much a part of Zazenkai, where we start in the dark, we end in the dark during the winter. And it's very much a part of any lengthy sitting. It is close. It is intimate. Yet mystery and manifestation arise from the same source. It is not separate. In darkness, all things are the same. So often I encounter people struggling with darkness and despair, that emotional darkness. Fears and worries about aspects of their human existence. And to be real, sometimes it's me facing those things, having that sense of emotional burden. This world of samsara is fraught with stressors. Climate change, politics, social injustices, broken systems, poverty, old age, sickness, death. It can be easy to fixate on how wrong things are. But I want to invite you, when you notice yourself falling into that view, to reorient towards the sense of darkness. Not the darkness of despair or delusion, rather the darkness of potential, of emptiness, of oneness, or purity, although purity is a loaded word in our common era. It's funny, but when thinking about this, when I was putting this talk together, I could hear my teacher's voice say, turn the mind bright. Even though I'm thinking about darkness, there's always that relationship between dark and bright, shadow and illumination. The brightness is not separate from the darkness that surrounds it. It's connected, it interpenetrates. It's a fertile ground for creativity and insight. And how we think about darkness matters. Our thoughts shape our views, which shape our reality. As we connect to our experience, it's important to notice the quality of that experience, where it leads us. Oftentimes, we are drawn towards moving towards what is known. We want to know how to do things. We want to know how to do things right. We want clarity. But oftentimes, it's moving into the darkness that brings benefit. Moving into what can't be seen but is connected. As I said, it's a rich place, a fertile place. And the idea for this talk arose from a conversation with my colleagues where I work. I work in a place where there are many people of a variety of faiths, and oftentimes, well, sometimes, we'll find ourselves in conversation. What does this mean? What is that like in your tradition? Oh, for me, it's like this. I remember in myself and a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner, for a long time, were both completely stumped by the Christian idea of God's grace until we sat down with some of our colleagues and they explained it. I still don't understand it, but... But recently, the topic that came up was darkness. Recently, the topic that came up was this sense of, oh, how does Buddhism see darkness? And I can't answer for all of Buddhism. There's so many different flavors. But for our tradition, for our practice, for our lineage, for the way these teachings have come to us from India, through China, through Japan, taking on aspects of culture, of understanding, being translated from language to language to language to language. Now, here, as we pick up these ideas and begin to work with them, what is the sense of darkness that has that quality of yin, that has that earth energy, that damp energy, that fecund energy. This is not a darkness to be pushed away. It is a darkness that balances the light, the knowing, the clarity, the distinctions. But I'm going to go back and I'm going to read that first verse from the Tao Te Ching. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. The source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. And that's my talk for this morning. Happy to entertain questions or comments. We got buckets of time.
If you're in the sandal, please raise your hand and I will bring the microphone to you. Please say your name before you offer your question or comment and hold the microphone close to your mouth so people on Zoom can hear you. If you're on Zoom, you can type your name or your question in the chat box and Mess will unmute you or read the question out for you.
My name is Guy. Thank you for your talk. I was struck by what you said about raising the question as to whether the darkness was somehow instrumental that in the Buddha's enlightenment. and whether it could have, maybe couldn't have happened or reached that pinnacle without it. And I'm just curious about, you know, I offer this as a question. It might sound silly, you know, but equally so, you know, you might think it was silly that, well, the darkness was so instrumental. I mean, unless you experienced that for yourself. But I'd you know, kind of welcome everybody to, you know, ask themselves if they have certain habits, like even entering the Zendo Hall here, the meditation hall, do you turn to the north side of the hall or to the south side? Because it's a very different experience. The south side, the calligraphy Zhao means illumination. And literally, if you're facing those windows at the right time, there will be a lot of light beaming down on your face, and it's a very different experience. Yeah. If you turn to the left and you face north, then you're next to the Mo, which means silence, silent, or you could interpret that as dark, I guess. And that's also potentially a very different experience. And so if you, you know, have you tried different, have folks tried different directions, or do you have a habit of only going one way? I used to always go to the dark side. Mm-hmm. I used to always go to the north side for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of switched it up.
I was going to say, you're not there now.
Yeah, so.
What was your experience changing sides in the hall?
I mean, I was really struck by this light beaming down on my face, and it was kind of unpleasant, actually, you know. But at some point, I thought, you know what? Like, this is actually important. I need this.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder that you have agency and can place yourself in the hall that benefits you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Kai.
We have Raju on Zoom. Mm-hmm.
Hi, good morning. What I was thinking about as I listened to your talk was that for the past several years, I've noticed that for myself, the cold and the dark, there can be more struggle for me. And once I started noticing that this year, I decided to really like just lean into it and take care of it and let it be the way it is, like allow for more solitude and allow for more quiet and allow for more coziness. And it's really made a difference for me to like recognize that that's part of my sort of like annual habit. And how can I embrace the darkness in a way that is nourishing rather than trying to push it away or make it different than it is? So that's been valuable to notice that pattern and engage with it in a different way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. There is something. We often live our lives by an artificial calendar that says all the days are the same length and take up the same amount of your attention, and it doesn't change throughout the year. Mondays are always Mondays, Tuesdays are always Tuesdays. But there is something sweet in moving with the seasons. We have our winter practice period and our summer practice period being times of less formality. Spring and fall are more formal, more busy. But it gives that opportunity to lean into picking up and putting down, to giving ourselves time to rest and time to be full of effort and vigor. Everything we encounter is changing, and this is like moving with the seasons is a great way to practice with that.
Yeah, and it allowed more ease.
Yeah, you don't have to fight against it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, Joshin. This is Mikio. The first time I visited this Sangha, that was the first time I experienced anything about Zen. Mm. And I looked at people sitting. Then what I noticed was, it's like they're all sitting in darkness because they're not looking at each other at all. Mm-hmm. And but then still they are together. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I saw that, I was like, ah, that's nice. You know, I don't have to be looked at or anything, I just sit with a whole bunch of people. So just your talk just reminded me of that experience. So thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that memory.
Yeah. Hi, this is Genko. This talk of the seasons reminded me of this period of time when the temple was closed, and I saw several posts on Facebook that talked about this time between Christmas and New Year's Day of being like the void. It was a very interesting experience. Mm-hmm. And I basically experienced it that way, where it was like I didn't have anything on a schedule. I didn't have anything. And this whole business of forgetting what day of the week it is and all of the things that go along with that strange period of time. And I found it renewing. And it was a great time simply to let go, to relax into just being without really expectations and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't know, it's like there's ways you can do it. I'm sure, in the past, I have often taken vacations kind of during that period of time and couldn't make it work this year. So vacation can be another kind of time like that. But somehow the fact that so almost everybody is doing that, and there really is, there's less traffic on the road, there's all kinds of things that make it a different kind of time. And it is one of the things I really love, is to pay attention to what's going on with the season and to mm-hmm. find my way to harmonize with that. So it's, mm-hmm. it's really been very nice.
That voidness is a great time to remember that you are not what you do. You are not your tasks, that you are more than that. And
right, just a different way to be in the world, mm-hmm. right.
And Genko, is your gen, I know you translate it as mystery, is it also dark?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
That's what I thought. Mystery light.
Mystery light, right here.
I'm Die Guy. You talked about God's grace and how it's kind of something that hangs you up a little bit. What if you called it the formless field of benefaction?
That would probably work for me. But is it like, are they equivalent ideas?
In my view, wow. they are.
Okay, I don't know enough about it to...
Yeah. Yeah. The beginning of the pandemic, a couple of weeks, was really great. I really loved that. Yeah. It's like it got so still, right? There was nobody on the road. I even saw a bobcat when I was out in the morning crossing the road, something you rarely see. Mm-hmm. It got old after a while, but, you know. That's enough.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
This is Colleen. I just love this section of the harmony of difference and sameness. In the light, there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark, there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. And similar to what Reiju and Genko and maybe others said about, you know, the seasons, I also used to just really kind of, like, I knew I didn't look forward to winter. Like, I just get kind of rigid around that. And since I started, like, relaxing, and rather than saying, you know, oh, geez, it's so cold and windy, I just, like, oh, it's cold and windy today. and you know, depending on the rain, I mean, there's still some rains that I say are miserable rains. Yeah. But loosening around that, and that bit about the front and back foot in walking, it's like we have to have the darkness to see the light.
Yeah.
And we have to, like, and there's gratitude there too. Like, we, you know, I can be grateful for the dark because the light comes next. And I don't know, I find that really useful.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you for your talk. Oh, this is Dio. I was spun a little bit about what Daigai just said. And about the, not about God, about the the COVID time. And I don't know, I'm just reflecting on how I've, in general, been pretty uncomfortable in the light. And the, like, relative and the, like, being seen, I don't like being seen too much. Like, I need to be seen a certain amount. But like it's happened a couple times in the past few days where I'd be like kind of on my own and like working on something. Like I go in the office at night. Nighttime is when I do my office work, and someone comes in and turns the light on, and then I'm just like recoil from it. Like, and like the messaging that I get from so many places is like, that's like not, like, ever since I was little I've been that way, and it's felt like something to grow out of. Like, someday I'll be more in the light around people. And like, I don't know, like during COVID time that was great because no one expected me to be out. And I could just be inside, and I don't know if I'm hiding or if like that's just where I would work better.
I think we all have our comfort levels with certain aspects of social interaction. And it can be good to push those edges a little bit. And it's also okay to lean into what is comfortable. The trick there is not to insist on one way or the other. So sometimes you're going to be seen in the light, and sometimes you can rest in darkness.
Like what Cohen said.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wisdom in the room.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts?
This is Mess on Zoom.
Hi, Mess.
Hi. I feel like you've touched on this, but I wonder about this question. I feel like darkness gets a bad rap culturally beyond Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And just wondering for further thoughts on why that is.
Well, oftentimes it's associated with pain. And I don't want to downplay the impact of the pain that people feel in their lives, whether due to conditions or internal states or whatever's arising in their life. But I think it's often linked with that sense of pain and or suffering. And it can be hard to separate that. There are cultural connotations that aren't associated with pain. None are coming to my mind right now. I don't know what I think. I think you're right. Darkness gets a bad rap. And when we interact with others, it's important to elucidate what sort of darkness they're talking about. The darkness that comes after a tragedy is significant. And I wouldn't want to take that word from someone because Buddhism says it can be another way. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping with this talk to introduce this way of looking at darkness, especially in relationship, that came to us through our Chinese ancestors, as something to hold with and. So there's this Buddhist term and, there's our colloquial term, and there's the older Buddhist term, ignorance. I didn't talk about ignorance, that's a big problem. But we have this one word that we use for all these different meanings. And English can be very confusing that way. There are so many words that have multiple meanings. And often we don't take the time to find out what somebody else is actually talking about. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate it. And Reiju actually also recommended a book called Opening to Darkness by Earthlin Zenju Manuel.
Ah,
a lot of wisdom in the Zoom room, too.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. My name is Julia. Just thinking about all the different places where I've seen like dark and light used, I haven't seen a lot of like twilight or like the changing in between times. Mm-hmm. Specifically when I think of like one of the big ones, which is like the Plato's cave where you come out and you're just like blasted by the sun and supposedly then everything makes sense. And I think like that's maybe not the most accurate representation of the light in this context of the words that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder like where you see representations of twilight or in between times.
I think those are the best times. And I think that in speaking of darkness and speaking of the relationship between darkness and light, like we create that duality, but actual experience is much more nuanced. So you've added another layer to the discussion of how we work with these ideas. And those twilight or dawn or those changing situations, we get to see all of it. We get to be confused. We get to not know. We get to maybe think one thing and come to realize later it's something else. And that's all okay. Most of reality is not a dualism or a binary, it's a spectrum. So I think that's there with darkness and light as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Hannah on Zoom. It says, after this talk, I feel as though darkness is the more productive space, holds possibility for us should we accept it. And perhaps light is now the space I wonder about its use, a sense of skepticism about it now, at least for myself. What might you think?
I think it's something that may be useful to explore in your practice. To attach to one and deny the other, I think it misses the mark. So watch the preferences. There is benefit in light, and I don't want to say danger in dark, especially how we define these things, but let this be a place to explore. Let this be a place to play. Oh, my preference is for dark now. Let's see what this looks like. Oh, I'm a little nervous about light and distinctions and clarity. Let's see what that is like. My guess is practice evolves and some of those perspectives will shift back and forth, will change. And I don't think any one position is better or worse. If it's held as a point in time, a point in experience. Does that make sense?
Anna said, thank you.
Thank you.
I have another question from Tony. It said, why not relate danger with darkness?
I don't know.
That's it.
All of what I'm talking about is, in a way, meanings we're ascribing to sounds. That we can look at it one way and say, in one sense of looking at darkness, there is this ripe, fertile, rich possibility. Another way we can look at darkness and say, I can't see it. Or we can say, like, there's nothing there for me. So I'm guessing I'm not understanding your question the way you meant it, Tony. I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little bit.
Yeah, I was just startled to hear you say that not relate danger with darkness. I get all this stuff about the words that you're talking about. That's all very true. But there is also real dread in darkness. It's not words. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how much I tell myself mm-hmm. all the nice things you've said, mm-hmm. and which can often be true, mm-hmm. there can be real dread in darkness. And you can't discount the association of darkness with dread and danger.
Yeah. And that's why I said people have terrible experiences, and I wouldn't want to take the word darkness from them by insisting on this particular view of darkness.
But is there any way of, again, that's just words. Hmm. How do I live with, cope with the sense of dread? That's a much more important question.
Mm-hmm. Give it a bigger container. Be bigger than the dread. It is an aspect of your experience, but it is not the entirety of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All righty. I think we'll call that good for now.